The views expressed in this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware.
WVUD presents Campus Voices, conversations with University of Delaware faculty, staff, and students about their teaching, research, service projects, and other interests. To introduce today's guest, here's your host, Richard Gordon.
Thank you, Jason. And joining us in the studio today, we have Michelle Bennett, who's the university's sustainability manager.
Hi, how are you?
What the heck does the university's sustainability manager do besides sit over in the general services building?
I help the university as a whole organization look for ways to improve our environmental, social, and economic feasibility slash success, prosperity, now and into the future. So the whole idea is that what we're doing today won't impact the university in a negative way in the future.
As we are in the middle of Earth Month, as we listen to this on the radio, you really do have a message that's tied in with the whole Earth Day, Earth Month movement.
There's all sorts of things, big and small, that people can do in their daily lives. Earth Month is a great way to start learning about those. If nothing's floating your boat, pick one thing, try it out, check it out, see if it sticks. And if not, pick something else and see if it sticks. We're working on recycling. We have a jobs event coming up, so there's a lot going on this month for people to get involved.
At your new website, you've got all sorts of things, FAQ, suggestions for student engagement. I really like you've got a section called Campus Action.
Yeah, absolutely. So under Campus Action, you can find out different volunteer opportunities that are available throughout the year on campus. You can do a one-off volunteer event that's already planned, or you can organize a group if you and a group of students or a class want to do a volunteer event. And they cover a wide range of topics. So there's kind of 4-H style stuff. There's helping out with international students, all sorts of great stuff on there. We also have pages in our energy and waste section that have information about what's going on campus, a how-to guide to all things recycling on campus. So there's a lot of great information on there.
You better actually plug the address for the website so people can go find
it. Yeah. So, okay, that website is udel.edu/sustainability. It's going to be really hard to find.
Oh, I know. So hard. www.udel.edu/sustainability. Now, one of the things that I think is really important for people to remember is that sustainability means more than recycling. Out in the Campus Action section, you suggest people look at energy, water, waste, transportation, and food.
Absolutely. So sustainability really is an umbrella topic. It covers everything. So if you think of environmental, social, economic as like the three core pillars of sustainability is what they kind of call them, I mean, that covers so much ground. So the biggest struggle for me is usually kind of bringing it back to make it more relevant. So with energy, we have a climate action plan where we want to reduce our CO2 emissions. Most of those emissions are related to energy and also transportation. We have links and information about parking on campus, about carpooling, and you can get a parking discount if you carpool. I mean, all sorts of great stuff. And a lot of it has been out there on the university web pages and websites, but they never had a place to come together and have like a one-stop shop for all of this information. So that's what our website is really trying to do, is be that one-stop shop for how do I do this on campus? Where do I go for that? What is the procedure for signing up for a parking ticket? You can get discounts if you bring your own mugs to buy a coffee. I mean, all that kind of stuff. So we're trying to hit as many of those targets as we can.
So it sounds like your site, and you're trying to use it as a clearinghouse for things that people are already doing, plus adding new initiatives.
Absolutely. And we're going to gradually expand that website. So it'll have events. It'll have all sorts of great stuff. And that's mostly linking to existing pages on the UD websites, but just having one place to find everything.
Who are some of your partners here at the University of Delaware?
Well, I sit within facilities, which is kind of an important distinction. So that means that, you know, I work day to day with our folk who are building and maintaining our buildings, who are working hard to keep everything running. I also partner very closely with Dining Services, with Res Life. I'm always looking for folk to get in touch with across the university and colleges. I've worked with Denon. I've worked with the College of Engineering, the English Department. We've also partnered closely with Public Affairs and Communication, CPA.
Time out. You've been working on the English Department? What, they throwing out too much paper?
No. Well, do they buy recycled paper? I should ask. No, I have a lot of interns every semester, and some of them have come from that department to help me with my social media and my website. I will also be looking for interns in the future for exciting areas like public communication and engineering and programming of all things. So, you know, stay tuned. That'll all be on the website at the beginnings of semesters. And my Twitter feed has all of that information as well.
And people, again, Michelle's website for University of Delaware Sustainability is www.udel.edu/sustainability. And that's a really good place to get started. When we met before you came into the studio, well, one of the things we talked about was all the food that gets thrown away.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So a lot of our students are aware of our trayless dining because there are no trays. Some students may actually remember that transition, and that is a huge initiative to reduce food waste. So much food goes to waste every year. It's one of the biggest sources of generating food and creating food, especially meat, is very resource intensive, from transportation, processing, packaging, keeping everything clean, etc. So when it goes to waste, it's like a huge hit economically. I mean, that's expensive. Fresh food is really, you know, where people spend a lot of money. It's a huge hit environmentally, and it's a huge hit socially for someone who could use that food. So on campus, we have trayless dining. Behind the scenes, Dining Services does a huge amount of work to reduce some of the food waste that we never even see. So when they're cutting up onions or fruit or whatever, they do as much as they can to reduce scraps, you know, whether it's watermelon rinds or bell peppers, you name it. And then a lot of the food in our new dining center, so Caesar Rodney, for example, has a huge digester, and you can put all the food scraps, except for bones and a few other things, into the digester, and it like cooks in there with this magical little ecosystem of bacteria, and the bacteria just devour everything. And then what goes down the drain at the end of the system is like there's no nutrients in it. Nutrients are kind of rough on the sewer system sometimes. It's just like a sludge, which sounds terrible, but the good news for us is we're not actually throwing anything away. We're digesting it. So, you know, we minimize as much as possible. That's like the first principle. And then everything that we absolutely can't minimize, you know, doesn't go to waste. It gets used in some kind of ecological fashion instead of just sitting in a landfill where it literally never rots.
Well, last weekend I was crazy enough to cut up a fresh pineapple for a fruit salad. What am I supposed to do with all that stuff that's left over?
Well, at home, you could look into having a little compost pile. They have a lot of options now that are really easy to maintain, stink-free, really affordable. I have one at my house. It's literally a metal trash can buried in the ground with, like, some holes drilled in it just to keep unwanted critters out of it. And I just throw everything in there, and I stir it up every now and again. I might throw a little soil on there, and that's it. It just does it by itself. It's, you know, that's the nice little magic of composting, is it just kind of does its thing.
Doesn't stink up the backyard?
Oh, no, no. I live in the city, so if my neighbors noticed, I would definitely hear about it.
And then what can you use the compost for? Just like regular gardening?
Yeah, regular gardening. You know, potted plants if you don't have like a little plot of soil. But, you know, I used to grow tomatoes with it. If you've never like grown a tomato and eaten it, it's so much tastier than what you get at the store. Like they don't even compare night and day. But I have a little 5x5, you know, garden. So I throw it all in there, everything, all of my food scraps that, you know, are vegetable based go in the compost pile, and then they go back into my vegetables. So,
well, as long as we're dealing with Richard's home and my need to go greener, mm-hmm. Let's talk about recycling. Every state has got different rules about what can and cannot go into recycling. So I know that in Delaware, I need to take the tops off of my 2-liter bottles and put those in the landfill bag.
Yeah.
What other kinds of things do people in Delaware need to be aware of in terms of what can go into recycling and what can't?
That's a great question. Delaware's kind of lucky in that we have single stream because you don't have to sort everything, which if you get used to it isn't horrible, but it's a, you know, it's a headache to remember. The things that can't go into the recycle here in Delaware are like any kind of napkins or paper towels. Like the quality of that paper just isn't high enough that the recycling can capture it. So tissue papers, you know, toss them in the trash, unfortunately. You got to take the plastic tops, the screw-on tops off of your soda bottles. Those, they can't separate the two types of plastic. Like your soda bottle and the top are two different types. And when they're screwed together like that, they can't separate them well. And when they get to the recycle plant, it's really hard to separate them because they both float, they have different similar weights, that kind of thing. So that's really tough. And a lot of states struggle with that. If you've traveled in the U.S. or lived a few different states, you probably lived in one where they had the exact same rule. All the aluminum, all of the like hard plastic containers, so your detergent, shampoo, soda, all that can go in the recycle. That's perfect. Printer paper, newspaper, and soft cover books, throw them all in the recycle. Hardcover books, like our wonderful, not expensive at all textbooks, can't go in there because the hardcovers, again, can't be sorted. Recycling is really restricted in areas and states by what their local center can do and what their fancy machinery can sort. Once they sort everything, they can recycle almost anything. It's all the sorting that's like where the technology is moving right now.
I know that in some parts of the world where labor is less expensive, juice boxes are recyclable because they can be separated into the component parts, but not in the United States.
Yeah, and I mean, unless we found a way to sort them again, we could ship them off to somewhere to get them recycled. But absolutely, there comes a point in the recycle stream where you have to have somebody who can just like manually get their hands in there. And, you know, it's the kind of job where you're dressed up like you're about to walk off on the surface of the moon. You know, when the price of labor is quite high, it does put a premium on what you can and can't recycle, and you have to ask yourself, what's the return? And working in sustainability, I look at that, and I'm like, it's not just an environmental issue, it's also economic. So you have to take it all into account. So until, say, landfill space becomes so expensive and restrictive that suddenly those juice boxes look really tasty, you know, where's the investment? So, and is it a wise investment?
What about contamination with food? So, for example, when I finish my jar of peanut butter for my morning peanut butter toast, you know, that's got all that peanut butter stuff in it. Is that still recyclable, or do I need to really wash it first? Or
I would rinse out anything with like really goopy food. So, like melted cheese. You can't really rinse melted cheese, but you know what I mean. So, like peanut butter is a really hard, like kind of sticky substance. It's really tough. If you've ever put a giant spoon of peanut butter in your mouth, you will know that you are in for a long but delicious process of, you know, eating it.
And unfortunately, recycling machines don't have taste buds.
They don't. And can you imagine the smorgasbord of just deliciousness they would have? So, you know, rinse that sucker out. I know when I have, like, peanut butter, I like it so much that I just get as much out of that tub as I can. Or, you know, my housemate has a wonderful dog who also benefits from the soon-to-be-recycled critters. But just give things a rinse. If it's like a really nasty pizza box, throw that sucker out. Like, let's be honest, if you have to like really pick a bunch of like food off of something to make it look like, you know, someone would want to handle it, then, you know, just go ahead and toss it. But there are so many things like shampoo that don't matter at all. So really, it's tough foods that are the biggest problems in my understanding.
So basically all those big bottles of detergent and drain cleaner and all that stuff, it's all okay to recycle after you rinse it out.
Yeah, I mean, with like detergents, I think that you don't even have to rinse those out. I think they're good to go. Anything with like a really dense, goopy something that's like stuck on there like a little barnacle, I think that's where you start to have problems. But if like a really quick rinse is gonna like get something out of there, they have to do that at the recycle center anyway. But if you have like a shampoo bottle that is like 3/4 full of shampoo, like do us a favor, rinse that stuff out. If it's empty, maybe a quick rinse, throw that sucker in there.
I've been spending a lot of time talking with Michelle Bennett, University of Delaware Sustainability Manager, about recycling because that's something everybody can do, whether they're a student, an employee, or just a community member.
Absolutely. Yeah, and there's a urban legend I've been hearing lately about how, oh, we put stuff in the recycle, but it doesn't go to the recycle center. They just throw it out anyway. And I can assure you, working in facilities, that our fine facilities staff absolutely do not throw away anything in a recycle bin. It goes to the recycle bins here on campus. We got the big ones. And those go to the recycle center. Now, if there's a lot of contamination in the recycle center, there's nothing they can do with it, they might send it to landfill, and that's where we come in. So throw your bottles, throw your cans, throw all that good stuff in the recycle. Anything like food wastes, anything that's not recyclable, juice boxes, perfect example. Throw it in the trash, keep those suckers separate, and then the recycle center will have a much easier, much better job doing the right thing. And, you know, when you recycle these resources, it saves a huge amount of time and money and resources compared to making something new. Recycling an aluminum cans is like less than half the energy that goes into making a new can. You know, plastics, same thing. And all of those little stats and numbers are online. If anybody's really curious, I'm happy to provide them. But it really does actually save a lot of resources. So it's a huge, easy thing people can do. Our local waste stream guys love it, too. It keeps them in business. So let's keep them happy.
What are some other easy things that students and faculty and employees and just community members can do to improve sustainability?
The easiest things, anytime you're using a electricity and you don't need to be, turn that sucker off and you'll be saving yourself money too. So cell phone chargers, a lot of people don't realize that they're running full blast even when your cell phone is not actually plugged into them. Turning off lights is really easy. I run like my washing machine, my dishwasher at night because at least where I live, after 10 o'clock, electricity's on sale. It's off peak hours. So I'm spending half as much money to do the same like amount of work. A lot of utilities work that way. I could look it up here to see what the exact rules are. But it's like, yeah, I mean, electricity's on sale at 10 o'clock. Absolutely. I'll set that and then I'll go to bed. And that helps the power plants. It has an efficiency, you know, in the utility system. Other really super easy things people can do, if you have like a leaky faucet, like go online on YouTube and see how to fix that sucker. It is so easy. And water is such a precious resource. You know, we're not in California or whatever, but we don't appreciate how precious clean water is. Like, don't waste that stuff. Like, just, you know, 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes, and you'll be saving yourself money on top of a really major natural resource. You know, just learning a little bit about using your money wisely, guys. You know, making good, sound investments and keeping the social environmental impacts in mind goes a huge way towards, you know, your future, most importantly, but also giving a little something to the people around you, too, or at least keeping them in mind. So,
you sound like me talking about IT security things. It's so easy just to do the convenient thing, but whoops, does that expose your identity to risk? Or it's so easy just to toss everything.
And that's the thing, like remembering to do it, making it a habit. I mean, this is something I definitely struggle with, is bringing that reusable bag to the grocery store, man. Like, it took me months to like get into that routine. And so what I like to encourage people to do is like pick one thing, pick something that's like in an area that you're interested in, that's important to you, and like just pick up one habit. And it might take you, you know, for me it was like 6 months to get into the habit and actually do it. But just, you know, don't be mad at yourself if you forget. Keep at it, be determined. And once that thing's a habit, it's like, that's when you get to turn around and say, oh, it's so easy. Well, getting there, okay, it's not always easy, but just pick one thing, stick to it, and then when you've got that thing, pat yourself on the back, pick another one. It's kind of like having a new little hobby every few months or however long it takes you to do, and it's just a small thing. It's no stress, quick and easy, and, you know, if you don't pick it up immediately, don't beat yourself up. Just, like, keep at it.
Yeah, those recyclable or reusable grocery bags have a tendency to migrate from my car into the house, and I just often forget to migrate them back into the car before I go shopping.
Yeah, see, I have a little coat rack where I hang my purse and everything, and those suckers go back on the coat rack, and then they migrate to the car. And that was it. Like, it was like a month or two before I was like, oh, dude, if I put them there, I'll remember them. You know, I need to get into a habit of doing it here at work, because what if I run off to get, like, a bunch of ramen noodles or something in case I really need a quick lunch at my desk. And I always forget my reusable bags. I'm like walking across campus with my plastic bags. And I'm like, oh, God, I got to find a use for these now, because we don't just throw them away. Like,
oh, that would be not good if somebody spotted the university sustainability manager walking across campus with plastic bags.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, exactly. So, but, you know, I'm not perfect. I'm not out there to be like everyone's got to. I don't need people to drink the Kool-Aid if they're going to get on board with sustainability. Like, for me, it's not like an ideological thing. It's like there's smart things to do, common sense things to do. Some of them are easy, some of them aren't, but the goal is to improve what we're doing now.
Well, for example, you mentioned meat earlier, and I know this from my father's work with different parts of agribusiness, that feedlots are just an ecological nightmare, and that's where most of our beef and pork comes from.
Absolutely. And, I mean, it's such a difficult issue because meat is so resource intensive, especially, and it almost, you can grow meat a bunch of different ways. There's industrial farming, there's kind of more, you know, free range organic-y stuff. But any way you look at it, you're putting pounds and pounds of water and food, giving it to a creature, and then getting like ounces of meat out of it. And there are different like ratios for different kinds of critters. And I mean, guys, let's be honest, meat is delicious. Like, I'm not a vegetarian. So, you know, like, my advice is if you want to reduce your environmental footprint, cutting back on meat is the number one hands down way to do it. Like cutting back, if you want to go veggie, like guys, when I go vegetarian, I feel amazing. Like I feel like Superwoman every day, but then I smell the bacon and it's just game over. It's game over. So, you know, just keep that in mind. And if you want to know more information about those issues, there are plenty of very good documentaries, very good websites out there. I'm not going to get into it. It's a huge impact, and it has social implications. You know, who's living downstream of all that? You know, one of the number one sources of water contamination in this country and around the world is from raising animals, because animals make a mess, and it goes downstream. So fortunately, we have really good water systems that, you know, chlorine, and we clean the water, which is fantastic. But think about places where they don't have those systems. It's not a surprise that until relatively recently, most people didn't eat a lot of meat. And it's not that they didn't like it. It was expensive. But also, growing all those animals had such an impact that they just, resources going in were too high. They just didn't have the capacity for it. So
a lot of these things we've been talking about, we're talking about from the individual point of view, but they all have policy implications and economic implications.
And that's, you know, the nice thing about living in a democracy, or, well, we're technically in a republic, is that, you know, we get to have those discussions. And sustainability looks at it, and it's like, we need to listen to all the stakeholders. So it's an inclusive kind of perspective and philosophy. And, you know, my personal attitude is like, A, I don't need to agree with everybody, because then you're not living in a democracy or a republic. If you get everything you want in a democracy, you're doing it wrong, is what I like to say. But also, you know, if you don't listen to everybody, and especially if you don't listen to people that you disagree with, you have no idea what you're missing. So when I have students who really challenge me on issues of sustainability, whether it's for or against whatever, like my attitude is that they're challenging me to do better. So I see it as an opportunity, even if I do get a little flustered sometimes. But walking into any situation assuming that everyone's going to agree with you, or that they even should, is problematic on so many levels. And let's be honest, it doesn't really work out for people who kind of operate that way. And it doesn't matter what your politics or whatever are. Like, that's just a bad attitude. So bring it in and just say, like, it's okay. It's okay if I don't agree with them. It's okay if they don't agree with me. And we're going to, you know, see what we can do to find common ground, or just do what we're doing better. Always an opportunity for some kind of improvement, even if it's just like disliking each other a little less. So.
Well, there's also just the matter of trying to let people see that it is in their own self-interest too.
Yeah, you can make the case, and some people might sit back and be like, oh, okay, sure. And some people might sit back and say, well, I disagree, and they might have a really good point that you had no idea about because you're not in their shoes, you know. But they also might come back with a point that is challenging. And, you know, so it's just trying to work on it.
Michelle Bennett's been building partnerships with units that are already doing sustainability. She's been working with units like facilities, dining, residence life, academic departments. She's trying to get students involved in contests and all that kind of thing. But one of the things that when we met before we came to the studio, it really fascinated me was you talking about what the university is doing to deal with storm runoff,
and
what they want to do in the future, what we have done, and ways that we can improve that.
Yeah, that's a great issue, and actually it's one that aren't on a lot of people's radars. So the University of Delaware just sits on the local geology, and all the water that runs off campus percolates through the soil and the earth and refreshes local aquifers, or, you know, local well water. So just by the accident of geology, we refresh the well water for a lot of people in the area. So the university is very sensitive about what runs off of campus, and that includes everything from like mud and you know, soil that doesn't have enough grass on it, to obviously chemicals. You know, we have mechanic shops for our buses and fleet vehicles. Those absolutely very closely monitor their runoff and make sure nothing, you know, runs off. We don't even wash our vehicles on site. We take them to special, if we wash them at all, we take them to special car washes that capture their stormwater for this exact reason. So what are we doing now? Because of where we sit, the university is very closely regulated by DENREC, which is great, and we have a really strong partnership with them. So obviously we do everything we need to do to make sure that all the water coming off campus is as clean as it can be. We have a few sites on campus that are more closely regulated than others because they deal with like motor oil and other things that are like really nefarious in the water but when it comes to things like our grounds and our landscaping, I know that there's been kind of a movement and an awareness on campus a few years about green the green and what goes on the green. And, you know, in our grounds staff, like, they don't put anything on the lawn unless they've done soil tests, unless they know how much water is on there. We're improving our irrigation system, so we're not watering while it's raining. We're taking a lot of steps to make sure that the only thing that goes down on campus and on our lawns are things that need to be there to maintain whatever that local aesthetic is. So it's definitely not a broad spectrum, all, you know, all scale anything on campus. We're planting more native plants that manage stormwater. So you'll see the bioretention areas around, like, the Harker Labs and some of the newer dorms. All those areas capture and treat runoff a little bit before it percolates into the soil or goes in the storm drain. We're bringing back plants that encourage pollinators. We're very conscientious about what we spray and when and how that impacts the local ecosystem. With the exception of, like, the green in areas that have really high traffic, really high use, and really are iconic to this campus, it really is like less is more. Come in, like, do work, do preventative work. I think the green is really the only place on campus that sees, like, a lot of heavy attention from our guys, and that's, we have so many important rituals and events and, you know, people hanging out there that the grass down there does take a beating, but we do our best to keep it lush and green without overdoing it. So our guys are always testing the soil, always figuring out what's going on before they put anything down.
Well, what I was really fascinated by was the replacement of great big cement tubes with trying to do some sort of engineering of pre-existing creek beds.
To
get the water to move off.
So an idea that we're looking into, we don't have any demonstration projects right now, is whenever we have, like, a really big parking lot and a lot of water's coming off of there, a lot of the time it can cause erosion, it can cause all sorts of problems downstream. So we're right near White Clay Creek. There's two other creeks that run through campus, either above or underground. And so what we're looking into is focusing more on kind of what's called regenerative and engineering, where you put more of a natural system in there, you plant some plants, and you design it the way that, like, say, creek beds and other natural systems that already exist in those environments operate. Because when you have a huge storm, like a hurricane, those creek beds, if you know, they don't have any major culverts dumping into them, they don't get washed out necessarily. Or if they do, they start to come back after a few years. So you see these solutions where these major storm events, you know, they're not destroying those natural systems, or if they damage them, that they slowly start to come back, or they adapt or they adjust. So the idea on campus is to look at areas where we have some, you know, erosion challenges and say, is that a solution that's going to work for us instead of putting in a concrete pipe? All those have to be maintained. When you put in a solution like that, somebody's got to go make sure those things aren't breaking, aren't leaking, aren't they're doing their jobs. With these regenerative systems, sometimes if they're done well, the maintenance is like a guy goes and makes sure there's no litter in there. A guy goes and makes sure, you know, are the plants doing okay? Great. You know, you really only maintain them the first few years, but until all of those, the plants, the microbes, the mosses, all of that get established. And once they're in, like, they live here by themselves anyway. So if one of them dies, they reseed. You know, they operate with a level of autonomy, and that's less maintenance for us, less cost down the road when they're done well. Now, the goal of the university is, if we decide to go that way with a project, it's got to be done well. So we're doing the work we need to do internally to make sure that any investment we make along those lines is done absolutely well. I do know down on South Campus they have a part-time wetland or something where they have a lot of stormwater, and that prevents any of the work going on down at the farm from impacting the stormwater. So that might be the only demonstration project I'm aware of on a scale larger than, like, a little flower bed or even a big flower bed.
Michelle Bennett, University of Delaware Sustainability Manager, thank you so much for coming in for Earth Month.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
Thanks for listening to Campus Voices. The views expressed on this program are those of the individual guests and do not necessarily reflect the official views or policies of WVUD or the University of Delaware. For more information about Campus Voices and to find archive copies of this and other episodes, visit our website. Using all lowercase letters, go to www.udel.edu/campusvoices. We invite you to tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 for Campus Voices on 91.3 FM, WVUD, and WVUD HD1, Newark, or online at wvud.org.